If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
Thank you, Bob. That wasn't us giving you the hook, by the way. That was just us queuing up that song. Go ahead and play it if you want, Griff. That's from Hamilton. We got Hamilton on our mind and now on our radio show because the previews in Chicago opened Tuesday at the Lyric, and I was amused by the fact that Lin-Manuel Miranda has been in town doing some interviews. He was on with Dean Richards, and he did a funny sort of stand-up thing at the Chicago Theater with Chris Jones from the Tribune. In fact, at least in the with Chris Jones, and I guess he did this with Dean too, you know, they did a little beatbox rap bit where the interviewer has to do the beatbox, and then he goes ahead and freestyles. And it wasn't too bad what they were able to crank out on stage spontaneously at the Chicago Theater. I'll play a little of that. I was so obsessed with this show when it first came out and when tickets became an issue. How are we going to get them? The bots are buying them up. What will the price be? Oh, I got to be there. I want to pay all that money, thousands, to go see it in New York. And who are the lucky people that are going to see it in Chicago, you know? And now my temperature on it is a little down because I think in time I will get to see the show, and I suspect it will be life-changing. Lou Manfredini insisted that it will be life-changing. I will feature a little of that Chris Jones with Lin-Manuel Miranda in a few minutes. Speaking of Lou, I was thinking about him today. They did the show from the Blackhawks event, and that sounded great, Lou. Another good show. But I was thinking Lou would probably be ashamed of me, or Mr. Fix-It, because I have a closet door in our off of our kitchen dining room area. And it opens up sort of, you just pull it, and the two panels vertically sort of fold out. So it's just a door that when you pull, folds vertically out. It's on a little track below and above, and it kind of slides and opens. I don't know if that helps, but here's the point. It had come off the track, and I couldn't get it fixed, and I really worked at it, and the doors weigh a ton. And so finally I called a fix-it guy, you know, one of these guys that helps dopes like me. He walked into our house, walked over to the door, picked it up, put it on the hinge, and within less than, and I know it would be easy to exaggerate this, but within less than 30 seconds, he had it fixed. He said, okay. And I thought, you know, if I give you $50 for that right now, it'll be worth every bit of it to me. And then he realized that, well, here's what happened. Here's why it broke. And so, yeah, we need to replace a part. Let's go ahead and get that fixed. And I said, okay. And then I have a problem with this one doorknob in the bathroom. So he walks into the bathroom. And within 30 seconds, he showed me how my repair of it wasn't going well and what I needed to do right. And I know that repair guys and fix-it guys must go through this all the time, you know, where they try and contain that smirk where they want to look at the guy and go, really? You pay taxes? You're able to draw income somehow and you don't see how simple these fixes are? And I'm sure maybe they don't even feel that way because, you know, we all have skills and not everybody shares the same talents. So maybe he's not muttering under his breath, I can't believe I'm making a living off of dopes like this, but if he was thinking that, I wouldn't blame him for a minute. I went to the iPhone store a week ago because my wife's iPhone would not ring or bing. If you called her, it wouldn't ring, and if you texted her, it wouldn't ding. And I said, Brenda, just go to settings. There's sounds, and then there's, you know, your messages settings, and you can figure this out. She couldn't. So I took the phone, and I couldn't fix it either. And I thought, son of a gun, this thing is actually non-functional. So I went to the Genius Bar, made the appointment at the Apple store, and walked in. And within 5 seconds, the greeter fixed it for me. She said, and why are you here for your appointment? And I said, well, the thing won't ding. And she just took the phone and went, boop. And within 5 seconds, she hit the button that I could not discover. And then I said, well, I still want to have my Genius Bar appointment because, you know, I'm here. I'll bet there's other things I don't know. So I went ahead and sat down and had him show me a couple of other things as well. But that's just kind of my world and has been part of my day. In this hour, we will play the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast. The gang visits once a week on Fridays, and we sit around and talk about current events and news. A lot of discussion about Donald Trump's suggestion that the Chicago police should engage in stop and frisk, what the Rascals think about that, and their preview of the debate on Monday night is very interesting, and so we'll let you hear a little bit of that. That'll be coming up in the next half hour. And then one other note before we get to one thing I do want you to call me on, and that is that in our 2 o'clock hour, we'll visit with Bob Whithorn. He's a spokesperson in California for GoFundMe. The GoFundMe page for a vendor in Chicago, a man named Fidencio Sanchez. You may have seen this story, pushing his cart in Little Village where he's selling treats and popsicles and whatnot. That GoFundMe page for this 89-year-old street vendor generated $384,000. $384,000. Donations from 60 countries. And it's kind of a sad story because I have a very, very healthy, vigorous father who's in his 80s. And there's no way I want my dad pushing a cart up and down town selling items out of it to try and make a living. But that's what this poor man was doing. And when the world saw the picture of him, and when they realized what that was, money came in from all around the globe. He's got more money now than he might live to spend. He's maybe going to buy a house. He said, I'm sure not going to work anymore. I'm so happy for him. But I thought, well, now, why is it that that one tips and other ones don't? What is a successful GoFundMe campaign about? And tell me a little bit more about this story. It's fascinating and it's heartwarming. Good Lord, we need those. We'll do that right after 2 o'clock. Tinder has hooked up with Spotify, and now instead of just profile, you are also able to indicate one song that represents you. I think it's just one song. Griffin, you may know a little bit more about this, producer Griff, than I do, but you will, just like you would have a picture and maybe some descriptors, you'll now say, here's sort of an attached song that represents me, right? So the question is, what is that song for you? What is that song for me? Bob, what is it for you? We'll play this game in just a minute. But what a good idea. I mean, that's brilliant. And I can't believe that they don't have that already. How did they not have that all along? But I guess they didn't.
How much time do I have to think of the song?
Because that's You do. Because I think
hard.
I know. Well, I think what you need to do, and you may have already done this, is you've just heard the concept. Quick, what song comes to mind? Even if you don't love your answer, that's your answer. So what's your song?
I just thought Ray Charles. I'm like, he has to have something.
Okay, well, now speaks. Ray Charles is the artist. Now just pick one, and that'll be good. That'll
a
be
A song
awesome.
For you, which
there
was
you
actually written by Leon Russell. But
see,
that's
you
a
know
beautiful,
the song.
Beautiful
okay, so
song.
Ray Charles, a song for you. Now, you may edit it, but that's your okay. starting point.
That's my starting point.
For me, the song that and it's got to be something that not only, I think, reflects your personality, but, you know, is saying something to a stranger. For me, like it or not, the first song that came to mind was Kool & the Gang, Too Hot. When I think of me, I think that's really how I am and what people want to, you know, how people perceive me. And then I paused and thought, no, maybe it's Little River Band, Reminiscing. But that's so cheesy. I hate that answer, too. I think I'm going to borrow yours, Bob. I think I'm going to go with something that's more soulful and just a little deeper.
But Too Hot was, that was like your first response
yeah,
without thinking.
That was me, because you know, I was a disco king, and I really am too hot.
But it's the song is about a relationship, right? That gets too.
You're talking to me about the Kool & the Gang yeah. song? Yeah, I don't know what it's about. I don't know what it's about. So anyway, call me. I don't know you. You don't know me. But I'm just kind of curious what sort of gut check reaction that question generates. If you're, and remember, you're on Tinder when you're doing this, which just makes the whole thing that much more pretentious, right? You're less inclined to be honest, especially if your song is Reminiscing by the Little River Band, and you're probably more likely to generate something that's going to make you look a little more interesting. But it's 312-981-7200. What's your song and why? I'm John Williams. This is WGN.
At 17, we fell in love. High school sweethearts.
Yeah.
Love was so
this is my Tinder signature song.
About a relationship.
We took the vows of man. Yeah, but can't you just see me with the shirt unbuttoned a little too much, just kind of slinking into somebody's apartment and going, ooh, ooh, yeah, that's me. That's me.
I actually have this song totally memorized because
I can't believe I used to know this song that well.
I used to work at WNUA Radio, so we played it a lot. This was heavy.
Rotation. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your loss. That's quite a shame. Explains a lot about you, Bob. Okay, we'll pick up a couple of phone lines here. So Tinder says that on their site now you can indicate what your signature song is. Let's start with where are the names here? Becky, you go first. Hi, Becky. You're on WGN.
Hi, John. Love your show, and it's fun to talk to you.
Thank you.
I was just listening, and I thought, you know, the first thing that popped in my head, and not to be mean or anything, but wouldn't everybody's song be All by Myself?
Well, right. But that would, however honest, that would make you such a sad sack. I'm not sure that's the song you want to lead with, Becky. All by myself. Yeah, you're going to get a lot of negative swipes, I'm afraid. All right, Becky,
terrible.
Thank you. Let's go to Deb next. Deb, what's the song that you're going to put out there that says, I'm Deb?
I like that old time rock and roll.
There you go. Now, that's a girl you want to party with. That's a girl you want to date.
Yeah, I don't want to be with Becky. I'm sorry.
Well, Becky's being a little too honest, but I got it, Deb. Good. Thank you. Let's go to Sally then. All right, Sally, so what's the signature song you're going to put on your Tinder page?
Oh, absolutely. It would have to be Three Dog Night, Joy to the World.
Nice. Nice.
I even want that played at my funeral. My kids know it.
No kidding. Really? Why does that song...
It's always resonated with me. I've always loved it. Always.
Three Dog Nights, Joy to the World.
And the way it's, and Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Was a bullfrog, was a good friend of mine. What are you, nuts? But think about it too, though. I mean, maybe a song that's a little obtuse like that, that isn't so direct, says something about you too. I'm not such a quick study.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought of, and then I thought of Stardust by Hobie Carmichael, because that was my parents' song, and I thought, no, that was my parents' song.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Okay,
and then
good enough.
My son's song, so, yeah.
Thank you, Sally.
Thank you. Okay. I love you, John. Bye-bye.
Well, I love you, too. Thanks, Sally. So who's next, Griff? So you can whisper in my ear or say it on the radio. Kathy's next. Go ahead, Kathy. You're on the air.
Hello, Johnny. Love your show.
Thank you.
It's got to be for me. Oh, you're welcome. It's got to be for me, El Jarreau singing Teach Me Tonight.
Wow. Sing a little of that for us, will you, please?
Okay. The sky's a blackboard high above you, and if a shooting star goes by, I'd use that star to write I love you 1,000 times across the sky. Something isn't very clear, my love. Should the teacher stand so near, my love? Graduation's almost here, my love. Teach me tonight.
Wow.
I think Frank Sinatra sing it too. I love you. Got it. El Jarreau, he's got a smooth and easy going. Frank Sinatra's got a little more of an upbeat one. So
that's funny.
It's just a great. And I'm a teacher, of course. So you got to love the teacher songs.
Well, thank you for the call. Nicely done.
That's
actually, and now that she mentions it, Bob, you know, when I was in college, courting the woman that would become my wife and the mother of my children. I would play Frank Sinatra. I think that's timeless.
It worked, obviously.
It did. I don't know if Brenda feels that way. I think she's okay with how things worked out, but I would probably think of a Sinatra song. But it just shouldn't be this much of an endeavor. You know what I mean? I mean, I think it's something that has to just come from the gut.
But this This is for Tinder, the dating, right? Because some people have been calling and saying, I want it at my funeral.
Yeah.
Like, you want the funeral song on the dating app? I don't know. Because if it's your funeral, then do Goodbye by Sinatra, you know.
Okay, one more, Griff. Where do we go next here? Joan, go ahead, Joan. All the ladies are calling in. Hi, Joan. You're on the air.
Hi. Love your show. And I'm 74.
Okay.
And
well,
the first thing that came to my mind was... as I'm driving along, is I Am Woman by Helen Reddy.
Nice. I mean, that.
I mean, I didn't even have to think.
You knew. That's what I'm talking about. Then you know you've got the right song, right?
But what I did was I YouTubed it to make sure I was, and yeah, that would be still my song.
Well, thanks for the phone call.
Sure.
Have a good afternoon. So it's something to think about anyway. What will your signature song be? And I don't know, Bob, Tinder just makes the whole thing seem so, what's the right word here? You know, it's just a little smarmy.
Yes. So, well, I'm sticking with a song for you, whether it's Tinder or whatever.
Yeah,
it's a good song. I mean, Leon Russell could write.
Okay, you can too. You've got some news for us. Bob Kessler's right around the corner here on WGN. Okay, thank you, Bob. Every Friday now we record a Mincing Rascals podcast. You can subscribe to it, however, and wherever you listen to or subscribe to find our podcast, Mincing Rascals. We're the only one out there, and we are me, John Williams, Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio News, Eric Zorn, and Kristen McQuarrie. They are columnists and editorial writers for the Chicago Tribune. The podcast is out there. You can listen to it now. We like to broadcast part of it on our Saturday show. And here we will pick it up with our discussion about Donald Trump's suggestion that the Chicago police should use stop and frisk. He said stop and frisk is a great idea. And then he sort of backtracked and said, well, I just mean in Chicago. So the gang started to talk about that. The first voice you hear is Kristen McQuarrie's. And the question is, would stop and frisk be a good idea in this city?
No, I mean, we've actually had, even before we had an official stop and frisk policy, police here have always had the ability to stop and frisk. That's according to Gary McCarthy, the former superintendent. I interviewed him quite at length about this at one point. We take more guns off the street than any other city in America.
Than New York and L.A. combined.
So, no, I don't think stop and frisk is the, maybe it's part of a broader solution, but no, that is not really what saved New York singularly. It's much broader than that.
Yeah, there's a lot of dispute about what the effect was in New York. The ACLU there says that it did not have any impact on crime rates. And, you know, one of the problems we have in the city right now is the relationship between the black community and the police. And if we are officially promoting a policy that says, yeah, we can just grab you and search you for any reason we want, that's not going to improve those relations.
David Axelrod said, I think it was on CNN, that it would be like throwing kerosene on fire.
I want to deal, though, with the pragmatism of it. I wish that we didn't have evidence that it didn't work, because on the surface it does sound like at least it's a good Band-Aid. At least it's something to try, akin to the National Guard, right? They're not going to be there forever, but if it at least stems the tide for a while.
Well, I think Kristen was saying was that, as far as she understands, and I mean, I'm not exactly sure what the exact letter of the police procedure is, but that they can, if they have any probable cause to search somebody, they can, and they do right now.
Well, it's not availed, really, that much call to racial profiling. If you see a few black men walking down the street coming at you and you're a police officer, just say, hey, fellas, how you doing this afternoon? Mind if I pat you down? I really think that's what Donald Trump wants, and I really think plenty of people support that.
I'm always struck by the mayor's emotion, you know, because he's got this hard-ass sort of reputation. And then it's not unusual for him at all when talking about individual people to sort of break down, and he
did twice in that speech.
Especially the one I saw that struck me was when he was talking about the Chicago police officer whose son was killed and then went back on the job, put the uniform on, and continued to protect us all. He could barely get through it, and he knew it was coming. I mean, he paused as even going into it.
Good speech, bad speech, what do you think?
I don't know what the impact of it's going to be. I mean, I think it's more about the program. I don't think the city is set up for effective speeches. You know, I don't know if we as a body politic pay attention to a speech the way we would to a presidential speech. I also think he's not a very good speaker. He doesn't have a way, you know, he ends up and he doesn't have a very polished way, so it's not effective in that way. I don't think the measure of the speech is that much. I think we'll see what happens with the policy.
Well, yeah, but I also think there's not much he can say. Even if he had the goods and maybe couldn't deliver it, Steve, I don't know what the goods are. I didn't see or hear them in that speech. I mean, you know, if the problem is crime, the solution isn't the National Guard or stop and frisk. It's so gigantic. I felt bad for the mayor. You know, everybody's looking at him like, okay, here's the most important speech of your administration. What have you got? And he didn't have, I didn't hear anything, you know?
I do not feel sorry for him. I'll say that. He gave a much more, I think, timely and gripping speech to city council. Remember that? Not after it finally dawned on him, after it finally he realized the watershed moment of the Laquan McDonald case, he spoke to city council and acknowledged that there is a problem in the police department and that we need to do something as a city to fix it. That, to me, felt more authentic. This speech, I'm with Steve, you know, it's words. It's I wasn't terribly impressed.
But what could the words have been, though? Literally, what could he have said? Well, we need more money. We need to mentor young black men so they don't lose hope. Some of that was in there, and that's true. But
well, one of the things I thought was very curious about this was that he delayed the speech. He was going to deliver it, was it Tuesday morning or something?
Tuesday.
And he delayed it, which really ramped up the expectations. The other thing that he did was he dribbled out details that were coming out, like the 970 new cops was already known.
He also
leaked something that's saying that he was going to go after black fathers, which he ended up not doing because just that leak provoked a really negative response.
Do you think he delayed it to allow for the announcement of the cops hiring? I can't figure out why it was delayed either.
Charlotte.
You think?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, you've got this huge national story, and not that he was expecting a national spotlight, but I don't know that you want to give this type of a speech when all of that was so raw. The bigger problem to me is that we have waited so long to address a systemic problem in these neighborhoods.
Yeah.
When middle-class black families started leaving 10 years ago and emptying out some of these communities, that should have been an alarm bell. Instead, we focus on flowers downtown and riverfront and all of this. And I'm just concerned that some of these areas, unlike New York, are so hollowed out at this point that there's almost no rescuing them. I don't know what you do with an entire section of the city. And I mean ward, maybe ward to ward, where it is house after house after house that are boarded up, businesses that have left. There's nothing left in some of these areas of the city, and we have allowed this to happen as a city. How do you fix that?
Which is why mentoring programs are not going to get the job done. I mean, you really need, and he said that there's like 2,000 jobs that Starbucks CEO is going to help him. But you need probably tens of thousands of jobs, right, or some equivalent number. You need a big economic revitalization, and he's not really talking about that. And that's the only way you're going to really turn these neighborhoods around. And you know, it's an ambitious lift, especially in a city that's really, really struggling financially.
Yeah, that's why I thought that speech was doomed from the start. That's the solution to crime, not, you know, some sort of policing tactic. But, you know, what's he going to do? Say we need to lift the economy and get these people jobs? Sure. But, I mean, what are you going to do about that, Rahm Emanuel?
Well, he wanted the job. I mean, seriously, some when these
I know. I was thinking, why did you want this job?
We're
Holy
just a bunch
cow.
Of podcasters here. we can criticize, but we didn't say, "Hey, I've got a solution. Elect me, I'll fix it."
Yeah. Okay. I'm not electing to run for mayor, but I will throw this in here that all of these things that the city council and the mayor keep doing, like mandatory raising of minimum wage, mandatory making people take time off of work, rejecting any sort of locally approved prevailing wage ordinance, right to work in certain areas of the city that have not had development in 20 years. Nobody wants to adopt some pro-business reforms in pockets of the city that are falling off the map. Nobody wants to even talk about that in a union-controlled, democratically-controlled city. You want to bring industry back to the southeast side, you're going to have to start looking at some of these alternatives, and no one will do it. No one will talk about it. We're going in the opposite direction. We're making it harder for businesses to open here.
So the debate,
mm-hmm.
What are we looking for?
Debates like these are more often lost than won, right? So Hillary needs to be careful not to, you know, do something that's going to injure herself. And I don't know if Trump even has that bone in his body. But here again, I want Hillary to win the debate. I want her to win the election. So I'm thinking, okay, don't screw up, don't screw up, don't screw up. And that's probably the recipe for screwing up.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, they're predicting 100 million viewers of this. So pressure's on. For both of them, just to not slip up, to not say something that becomes, you know, the lead story and all of the rest, if there is substance, gets lost. But, I mean, I think it's pretty clear. He has to look competent and capable, and she has to make him look incompetent and incapable. And if she can do that, I think this will be a pivotal moment for a lot of people who are on the fence.
This is where we are now, is you can only lose. You can only misspeak at a news conference. You can only lose anywhere. And so I think that's what this debate will be about, too. Who's more afraid of losing? She is, which I just think it's fraught with peril for her Monday night.
One of her people said this week, Steve, that they're afraid that the bar will be lower on the questions for Donald Trump since, you know, she's been a Secretary of State. There's a certain competence you'll expect her to have. She'll get asked harder, more detailed questions where Donald Trump will get kind of softballs and then we'll just all you know, the next day weigh what he said.
First of all, I wanted to put in a plug for this debate watching party that Kristen and I are going to be joining with Darlene Glanton. We're going to be watching it with readers and listeners, I hope, over at the Witt Hotel. And you can go to chicagotribune.com/debate night. You can come and join us and watch and
plug.
Plug. Anyway,
I thought we did those at the end of the podcast.
No, so radio. You guys
I'm
going to
do it at the end.
No,
we're going to really jam up the.
I believe that we have two. We have there's sort of two issues these candidates have to overcome. Hillary Clinton has the honest and trustworthy thing, and you know I've got my certainly my opinions about this, but you look at the polls that came out this week. Donald Trump is 10 points ahead of her on honest and trustworthy. She has to bring her honest and trustworthy numbers up. I don't know how you do that during a debate. His problem is that people see him as temperamentally unfit to be president. And I think that that is a much easier bar to clear in a debate. If he can manage to keep control of his rhetoric, keep control of his anger, I mean, if he shows some restraint, I think the debate is his to lose.
Yeah, I do too. And the point is, the questions only matter to one candidate. Hillary Clinton will try to answer the questions or try to obfuscate the questions. Donald Trump won't hear the questions. You know, he will only respond and say what he wants to do. I don't think he feels an obligation to actually answer to things. So I just think that that's going to work to his benefit as well.
Yeah, I mean, aren't you most nervous for Lester Holt in this whole situation? You know,
he doesn't want to be Matt Lauer.
Well, and also we've kind of gone through Benghazi and the email scandal and all that. Are we really going to spend all this time trying to pin her on that? Or are we going to get a better sense of how these two people would be as president? So I think there's a lot of pressure on him to reveal the two of them without getting us sidetracked in the weeds on issues that have already been out there.
So I heard something this morning that makes a lot of sense. This person said, what Hillary Clinton should do is when Trump says something that is clearly wrong, she should engage the audience, look at the camera and say, all right, everyone out there, in other words, Google that right now. Search that and you tell me what you find. And that's a way to engage the audience and to actively make them participate in a falsehood from Donald Trump. I think that could really work.
Hillary's always been the smartest kid in the class, right? I mean, she's not gonna blow some answer.
I wonder if she should bait him.
Like I say, she's gonna try. She's gonna try.
What do you guys think happens then? So he does that presidential speech style, and Hillary's competent on the issues, but neither of them, you know,
so
makes
it's a
big
push.
Mistake. It's a push. Then how do you score that, Steve?
Like I said last week, I think anything is possible now.
Maybe she looks at him at some point and just addresses him directly, and she calls him Donald. She says, Donald, tell the American people, or so you're saying that. You know, I wonder if she just literally walks an issue up to him that he's obfuscating on, and I wonder what that would be. I'll bet in the back of their pocket they have some strategy like that.
Well, you know that the Clinton team has been gaming this out in every possible way, and Trump is not. Trump is not preparing. Famously, he's off doing rallies and stuff. He's relying, as he's relied all along, on the force of his personality. This is about his attitude and his personality. The question is what personality are we going to see from him? Are we going to see someone who is more of a statesman?
I don't think he's going to face a disaster on Monday. I just don't.
I think he's going to stumble, though. I'll just put that out there now. I think there are going to be some gotcha questions where he comes across as being very ill-prepared. Do you remember early
gotcha questions or specific hard questions?
Well, both. Okay. Do you remember he did an interview there was some interview where he absolutely did not know what the answers were and he fell back on that. I'll have people around me who will know the answers. I do think he will stumble on some of that because if they don't ask him some questions like that, I think it will be a failure of the debate.
And that will be seen as a gotcha question, though. If they pull out the name of some leader and some issue and he stumbles on that.
No, that's not a gotcha question. A gotcha question would be saying, name the leader of Azerbaijan and how old is his daughter? That's a gotcha question.
Who's Becky, question, Becky, Becky's dad.
Yeah, but a question about, you know, what do you think about the leader of Uzbekistan's move toward, you know, Chechnya or something? That's not a gotcha question. He's supposed to know that. She's supposed to know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if he doesn't, though, we are supposed to care. That's the thing, Steve. You said, well, I want everybody to Google the answers, and I think they'll find out that he was lying. Say it goes that way. Hillary calls him out. I'm wondering how damaging that will really be to Donald Trump.
I want him to answer a lot of questions about his foundation because he hasn't had to do that yet. And look, this is another instance of that where she's been on the defensive about her foundation forever. Nothing's been proven. And with his, it looks pretty clear that things have been proven. They've paid fines. They've done wrong, and he has not answered questions about that yet.
If that question is not part of the debate, again, that, another failure to me. Because, yes, the Post has done all this reporting for the past, what, week?
Yeah.
And he has not had to address it yet. So
that's Kristen McQuarrie, along with Steve Bertrand, and then, of course, Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune, our own Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. I'm John Williams, and that's part of our Mincing Rascals podcast. You can hear it in its entirety, including the gang's recommendations. At the end of each podcast, we say something you're reading, listening to, watching, or consuming. What's your recommendation? And there they are again. They're also at WGNplus.com. You can find it there as well. They are the Mincing Rascals. By the way, if you have a prediction, if you want to kind of dip your toe in those waters, something you think we're going to hear or see at the debate Monday night, you can call 312-981-7200. This is WGN. News at the top of the hour. Then we visit with Bob Whithorn, a spokesperson for GoFundMe. He'll tell us a little more fully the story of that street vendor in Chicago who got almost $400,000 from one of the most successful GoFundMe campaigns Illinois has ever seen. What makes a good campaign, and what was so special about this story? What a picture that went with it, huh? And then our Vibe Score segment, and the boys from the beat talk a little sports for us. You know, we're almost out of time for calls this hour. I will tell you this, though, and Bob and Griffin, this will be your task for the next hour. I'm making my presidential election bingo card drinking game, bingo scorecard, you know?
Cool.
So that every time somebody says one of these words, you have to take a sip or a shot.
Like huge being an example?
Right now I've got Lion, because he always calls her Lion Hillary.
Lion Hillary, yeah.
And I don't know if he's going to do that, though. That's not. I don't know if that's the stuff of debates. That's the stuff of stump speeches and commercials. But I don't know that you want to roll that out. But I've got Lion there. I've got terrorists. I've got Make America Great Again. I've got email. He or one of the moderators will probably bring that up. Experience, maybe a word she'll trot out a few times. Tough, a word both of them want to embrace. I'm not exactly sure what – it's easier to predict things he'll say than what she'll say. So I'm not exactly sure what else I need on
maybe
that scorecard.
The? It?
That's cheating, Griff.
We? I thought you wanted to get drunk. Come on, let's go.
Oh, well, that's true enough, yeah. No, I don't want to get drunk. I don't even want to watch this thing. I have so much anxiety about Monday night. I'm going to watch it through an open door from the other room. I'm literally distancing myself from it. So think about that. Other words that need to be in the scorecard for our debate drinking game. We'll pause here. The news is next. This is WGN. Okay, Bob, do you have any more words for me on the debate drinking game?
I think you covered most. I mean, huge, we did. And great.
Actually, I didn't. I'll put huge in there. Make
Donald
America
Trump's
great again.
I actually you're got looking for phrases or words? More phrases. Right?
I meant to tell you, I got a call from a good friend of the show, Gary Kranach.
You're kidding.
No.
Okay.
He said, he said he couldn't remember the studio number. He called myself. He said safety.
Oh, yeah I suppose, good, because that's really the – I guess if you're going to do terrorists, then you need safe. You know, the terrorists are make us nervous. I'm going to make us safe. So I get that. Safe, huge, Lion, email, experience, tough, make America great again. Yeah, I'm looking for – those aren't as much fun as I thought they would be. But if – and then Griffin wants the word the, because he just wants to get cranked during the debate and be taking shots or sips all night long. So I will post this on Facebook, too. I'm King John on Facebook. Also on my Facebook page, quick note here, that the remaining about 100 or so tickets are still available for our Thomas Jefferson show for the second one, which we've added November 5th. So we'll be right up against the election. This will be sort of a chance for you to take a breather, appreciate the goodness and hope of America. That's what Thomas Jefferson, I think, will be all about. Tickets are at WGNradio.com/events, and we've got about 100 tickets left for the second show. The 10 a.m. one sold out. The 1 p.m. show is still available. That's Saturday, November 5th. I come on stage with Thomas Jefferson. We visit for about a half hour or 40 minutes, and then you get to ask him questions, too. These shows are always uplifting. They're surprisingly funny. They're tragic and sad. But if you ever wonder, gee, I wonder what the Founding Fathers would say about X, this is your chance to ask that question. I wonder what Thomas Jefferson would say about having to release your income tax reforms, forms. Having to release your taxes. Would Thomas Jefferson say that the candidates should be forthcoming about their health? I don't think they should. I think that's a private thing. But we'll. And here's another one. Somebody asked me the other day, we were talking about Colin Kaepernick standing and or not standing for the national anthem. I mean, it's all the way down to high school kids now, of course, are not standing for the national anthem or throwing up a fist or taking a knee. I wonder what Jefferson thinks about us pledging allegiance or, you know, standing in reverence for the national anthem. I think I know his answer to this, and I think you might not like it. So we'll be talking about those sorts of things from that perspective, and that'll be on November 5th, a Saturday at the College of DuPage. And your last chance to get tickets are really right now, wgnradio.com/events. So how about that story? A guy named Joel Cervantes Macias posted a picture of a guy he saw pushing a vending cart in a little village. The picture was of an 89-year-old man, Fidencio Sanchez. This 89-year-old man and his wife were living with their adult daughter who had suddenly died, and they lost any income they had. Evidently, they didn't have any savings, and he goes back to work for 8 hours a day, 6 days a week. He's pushing a metal cart up and down the streets in Little Village, and he's selling Mexican treats. And business is good enough that he makes $50 to $60 a day. He is 89 years old, and the picture of him pushing the cart hunched over is heartbreaking. And so the guy took a picture of it, and he put it on GoFundMe. And his goal was $3,000. Let's give this guy $3,000. What a nice gesture by Joel Cervantes Macias. And within an hour, he has $4,000. He goes to bed that night. You know, I love those viral stories. I got up the next morning, and I had a bunch of email. The next morning, he has $35,000. And within a couple weeks' time, the page is closed. They generated just under $400,000. Bobby Withorn's on a phone line. He's a spokesperson for GoFundMe, the site that they use to generate all those dollars. Hi, Bobby. It's John Williams. How are you?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me on, John.
Stories like that must make you love your job, huh?
It was really incredible. I mean, in just a few weeks, just to see the outpouring of support from folks all around the world. We saw donations, over 17,000 donations from 69 different countries just pour in to help Mr. Sanchez. And it's just the power of social giving and the power of folks seeing a powerful image and a compelling story and chipping in and supporting Mr. Sanchez and helping him retire.
What was the average donation?
It was actually $22 per donation. That was the average size. But we saw some folks chip in just $5, and we saw donations up to $2,000. And so it was an incredible outpouring of support for Mr. Sanchez, and just a really heartwarming story to see this campaign really take off and have so many people stand for him, stand with him, and contribute to his campaign.
60 countries, really, huh?
69 countries. So donations from all around the world. There were donations from all 50 states, D.C., Puerto Rico. The largest donations coming from Illinois, of course. In fact, this is the largest campaign in Illinois to date. So this campaign really took off, and we're so thrilled to see the response.
You know, I could see if some celebrity were behind it, or if President Obama mentioned it at a speech, you know, or one of the candidates did and said, we've got to, you know, help our, you know, if it had some sort of high profile push. But neither the photographer nor the man are famous. They don't have giant followings, right?
No, and that's what we see time and again is somebody takes a picture, writes a description, and with just a few clicks, they can share it with their friends, they can share it with their family members, they can share it online. and it spread all around the world in just a few minutes. So you can really see the power of social giving and the power of these campaigns really taking off and having a life of their own, and having these things spread, you know, tens of thousands of times all around the world is something that we see, you know, on a regular basis. This one is very unique, but we see campaigns like this day in and day out where folks just want to help. They want to find a place to give. They want to help their friends in need, and this is just the latest example in that.
Yeah, and to belabor the point, it is nice that there's something universal about kindness and giving and generosity. And if people in 58 or 59 other countries look at a man in the United States where they might be able to conclude, hey, poor in the United States is better than the rest of the world's got it. Why do we need to give to him? But they don't even do that. They just say, oh, what a sad story. I can help this guy. And it's nice that there's something universal about compassion and caring and giving and helping somebody out that you don't even know.
It really is inspiring. It really is inspiring. I saw, you know, I was watching some interviews just last week, and his granddaughter just welled up and was so thankful for all the donations from everybody helping out her grandfather. Yeah. and helping him retire and supporting his family. It was just a really remarkable story. And we're grateful for everyone coming together and supporting Mr. Sanchez, and also thankful for the campaign organizer, Joel Cervantes Macias, to take action and snap a photo and create the GoFundMe campaign and share it with all his friends.
Do you know, Bobby, did Mr. Sanchez know that this was going on as it was happening?
You know, yeah, he continued to update the campaign page. And so with GoFundMe campaigns, you can directly communicate with the donors and keep them up to date. And so he actually updated his campaign about 10 different times over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, but I'm talking about Mr. Sanchez. But did Mr. Sanchez know that this was happening?
You know, I think he was shocked when he found out. I think he couldn't believe all the donations that were rolling in to support him and help him retire. I think I would obviously be shocked if you receive hundreds of thousands of dollars in just a few weeks. But they presented him with a check in the middle of last week, and it was great to see the community rallying around to support him.
And then how does GoFundMe work? So then you all take 3 or 5%, is that right?
5%, yeah. And we are working behind the scenes to offer customer support to all of our campaign organizers, all of the donors, and all of the beneficiaries. We're working with them directly to ensure the funds are directly transferred to Mr. Sanchez. Oh, go ahead.
Someone told me that that's not income, so he doesn't pay taxes on that. So if it's $384,000, you guys take $19,000 out, so he's at around $360-something. He gets to keep all of that, right?
Yeah, so typically the donations are considered personal gifts, and they're not taxed. So the money will be transferred directly to Mr. Sanchez, and he's working with some folks offered to help him with his finances, and so he has some expert advice to help him with the funds. So he is he'll receive the money, and we'll have some folks helping him out in the near term here.
One last thing, then. Bobby Withorn's on a phone line, a spokesperson for GoFundMe. But I mean, I have seen other people do just as deserving, you know, funds, and it didn't go. It didn't go. I wonder what advice you have for people on that.
You know, my advice is to just tell your story. Be honest with the GoFundMe community as to why you are raising funds, why you want to support this cause. And I would encourage folks to share their campaign on social media, share their campaign on Facebook, share it on Twitter, get the word out, and continue to build support for your cause. And that's the best way to really get exposure for your campaign. And typically, folks want to give. They want to support you. They want to help your cause. And if you can share it with your online community, you'll have a greater success with the GoFundMe campaigns.
My guess is that if you are giving money to an individual, it's probably a more compelling pitch than if you're giving to a cause, giving to a city, sure. giving into an institution. So probably the more personal you can make the appeal. You know, if it were, say, let's raise money for a college, you'd be better off picking a single student that needed money at the college rather than the institution itself.
Correct. Making the campaign personal, because you know exactly where the funds are going. You know how the funds are going to impact that individual. And it's funny you mention college and students, because we actually just announced last week a $100,000 GoFundMe competition. We're going to award 10 students a $10,000 scholarship to help them pay for tuition. And all students have to do is create a GoFundMe campaign, use the hashtag GFM scholarship, and they'll have a chance to win a $10,000 scholarship for their tuition. So we are trying to encourage folks to create GoFundMe campaigns to pay for their tuition, because a lot of folks and a lot of students are straddled with debt and having a tough time paying their tuition costs. And so we decided to announce a $100,000 GoFundMe scholarship, and we'll award 10 scholarships later this month for students paying for tuition.
Can that be for people who have already graduated and now have debt, or does it need to be for students who are going to school currently?
It's current students and current undergrad and graduate students.
Yeah. Are there some categories that are off limits? Can I say, hey, I'm fine, but I'd like some money too. Can I just ask for money on GoFundMe?
You know, we encourage campaign organizers to be specific with what they are raising their funds for. But there are, you know, we make it as easy as possible for folks to raise money for just about anything. We have, you know, obviously some terms of service and some rules that you have to stay within. But you can raise money for just about anything, and if you have a compelling reason and a compelling story, and you're asking your donors why you're raising money, we encourage that, and we encourage folks to continue to share their campaigns with their networks.
Yeah, I'll just give you one other example, and then I'll let you go. Bobby Withorn's on a phone line, spokesperson for GoFundMe. That's interesting news about the scholarships. A friend of mine in Minnesota, and I told you a little bit about this guy, his grandson died when the child was in his mid-teens. They didn't think the kid was going to live that long. He had swelling on his brain when he was born, and he lived a life that, however happy and energetic, was far too short, and he was never able to be as physically engaged as healthy kids are. He couldn't go to a park or a playground. In his name, his family is trying to raise money for a more friendly playground and baseball field. So they're going to build one of these soft surface miracle fields, and then adjacent to it, a kind of soft surface handicap accessible playground. The whole thing, and there's all kinds of expenses associated with it, is going to be over $1 million. So it's not a small thing. And they said, well, let's just pick one of the gadgets at the playground. It'll be an aquatic theme. So there's this giant crab creature that kids could climb on, and you wouldn't be nervous about it. I love these things. The teeter-totters and swing sets accommodate wheelchairs. Isn't that a great idea? And so he wants to get this thing built, and one of the features is this giant kind of plush crab that you could climb on. That would cost $7,000. So instead of overwhelming people with $1 million, say, let's just get $7,000 for this thing, and they've only got, you know, 1,000. Of the million that they ultimately need. And I'm frustrated for the guy. I'm thinking, how does somebody – there's so many people who know or have somebody who is not able to play at a playground for a variety of reasons. And here's – so in that person's name, you would want to donate to the playground, but it's not trending. And I don't know what advice to give him, how to juice that thing up, you know?
Yeah. You know, my thought is to continue to do what they're doing and trying to get the word out on local media, trying to talk to folks like you to encourage or to increase the awareness of the campaign, and be as specific about the campaign, and continue to engage the GoFundMe donors, continue to update the campaign page and communicate directly with their members of the community, with their friends on Facebook, about how this would impact the community. And
that's interesting. You know, yeah.
Continuing to directly communicate with the with their folks, with their friends, with complete strangers in the neighborhood may generate additional awareness and eventually increase donations to that campaign.
Well, if you want to help out my friend, his the name of the park is it's in the name of his son, Zachary Johnson, and you spell Zachary with two K's, Zachary Johnson, and it's in Minnesota, and you can see it there. Hey, Bobby, nice to talk to you. Maybe we'll visit again when another story like this wells up, but thanks for the information.
Good deal. Thanks, John.
Bobby Withorn is with GoFundMe, and that park for my friend is the Zachary Johnson Park. You can spell Zachary with two K's. Okay, still to come, our Vibe Score segment. The boys from the beat say hi, and Chris Jones works a beatbox on WGN.
Oh, wouldn't you know it?
Thank you, Bob. The new Wilco that we're listening to there. I'm John Williams. This is our Vibe Score segment where we talk about things that are popping up in the pop and news culture, and we rate them. That's right. Vibe Score is an app I developed with my cousin, and it gives you a chance to stay in touch with the news that's of interest to you, various categories, sports, TV, music, and then you're always asked a scorable question at the end of each post. So Wilco's got a new... Is that a new album out, Griff, from Wilco?
It's a new album. It's called Schmilko. So Wilco Schmilko. They're definitely in
there. Okay,
that.
I love this album.
I know. It's almost as good as the Lobster. Almost as good. they're in that... I think they're in that stage of their career. They don't really care. They're just like riding it out, having fun. The songs are still good. That one was called Someone to Lose from that new album. Came out this month. And I like it a lot. I give it like a 78.
Are we just scoring that one song?
Sure, yeah. And if you've heard the whole album, then you can go on Vibe Score and rate that as well. But
right, because the song is posted on the app. You can see and hear the song at Vibe Score if you're following the music group there.
Yeah.
And I like the name Schmilko better than I like that one song. So I'm going to come in at about a 71 on that, Griff.
Okay.
But I'm there for Wilco. I like the group anyway, so I'll bet they won't disappoint. I hope not, that's for sure.
Kristen Decker is here with us. Kristen, what did you think?
Oh, hey, Deck, how are you?
Hey, I love Wilco, and I like the song, and I've listened to a few other songs on that album, so I gave them an 87. Plus, Schmilko is just a genius name.
It's genius.
I know.
They've had a few kind of... Their last album was called Star Wars. They had an album that was called Wilco the Album. So they're kind of... They really are. They, you know, once were very serious and put out some of the best albums of my lifetime, I think. Yankee Hotel Foxtrot is the big one that the cover, Chicagoans might remember, was a picture of the Marina's Towers. And that's probably their best album, but a lot of great ones. And now they're sort of older, a little more relaxed, just like rocking out
kind of
and with some simple songs. And it's
in.
Fun, yeah.
Yeah.
No, not mailing it
no,
in.
No, I wouldn't say mailing it in.
Yeah, I mean, some people might see it that way, but I still think they're sounding good. So,
I love their sound.
Okay, so there's one. Give us another one, Griff.
Chris, I might be springing this one on Kristen, but Mike Ditka has a beard.
Oh.
No, he doesn't just have a beard. He has the most interesting beard in the world. If you look at this picture of Ditka, he looks just like the guy in the Dos Equis ads. And, you know, Ditka's lost his mind. He lost it a long time ago. Maybe he never even had one, but this is a great look for him. He looks like the most interesting man in the world. His face is a little thinner in the picture we've posted, and he's got that white, neat beard going on, and... So for that alone, I gave it an 85. Congratulations, Mike. I know he really cares what I think.
He's
How
been
about
waiting.
You, Deck?
It's a very sea captain look.
for me.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, just for him switching it up a little, I'm going to give him a 66.
A little swagger there.
I'm in the 80s, too. I think it looks really good. It is. It's like feels a little on, a little trendy for Mike Ditka.
Yeah, I know. He so wants to be hip with the in crowd. But,
it looks
but it hipster beard.
Everybody's shooting for the sea captain look.
The hipster NFL coach sea captain look. That's what he's got going on. Well, good for you, Mike. Congratulations.
He looks like he's been rocking the new Wilco album, I think. Cool dad. Cool dad alert.
And this is why I love the app, that I can give my opinion on Wilco, on politics, and also Ditka's beard.
Yes.
So
and
fun.
By the way, that's the one I care the most about of the three right now. So what else you got, Griff?
Easily. In sports, Kevin Garnett ended his 21-year NBA career with an announcement on his Instagram. He won a championship with the Celtics in 2008, an MVP with the Timberwolves in 2004. What's your score for the career of Kevin Garnett? Are you a fan?
Yeah. Well, he's one of those players that I always like. You know, I think that a lot of the guys in the NBA did not like him that much, but he was a ferocious player, tenacious, finished his career in Minnesota where I live, and yet he's got this Chicago connection. How can you not like Kevin Garnett's career? Are you asking me to put a vibe score on KG's career?
Yeah, or just if you're a fan of him.
Or
yeah.
His game, yeah. How do you give him under a 90? I'll give him a 91.
He spent a lot of time in the same city.
Yeah, that's true. We value that, I think, as fans. We appreciate the commitment to a club. And by the way, the reason he left the Timberwolves the first time was he felt he got undersold. He had left with bitter feelings. From that team.
It was kind of nice that he got to come full circle. Kristen?
Yeah, I would say I give him a 76. I'm not that familiar with his career, but anybody that can last 21 years playing professional sports, like, bravo, dude. Good job.
Well, his knees were there for about 17 of those years, but yeah, he played for 20. Okay, give us another one, Griff.
In food and drink, AV Club has posted a defense of frozen pizza.
This is my favorite vibe.
Okay,
of the
welcome
that
we, to Vibe Score.
That we have on the Vibe Score. But my question was, does it need defending? Do you like frozen pizza?
Oh, frozen pizza is awesome. Listen, when 82. I was a kid, frozen pizza was the thing that mom served you when she forgot to cook dinner. And you go, oh boy, frozen pizza. But now, frozen pizza is awesome. I give frozen pizza 91.
this 21st century frozen pizza is really, really hitting it out of the park for you.
It's much, I'm telling you, Griff,
DiGiorno.
Frozen pizza today is really, it's not such a step down from, you know, pizzeria pizza.
No, easily, yeah. I guess maybe that's the better question. Is would you rather deliver or just pop in a frozen pizza?
Because you know who has a really good frozen pizza? Home Run Inn. Have you had Home Run Inn frozen pizza?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's sort of
I love that stuff.
Yeah, lots of matzo.
Is good.
Is
and
one that
stuff,
a lot of people don't seem to know. It's great.
Oh,
and
add it to my list.
You can get lots of matzo for like $5. I think the packaging costs more than the pizza in it.
Aldi has really
delicious.
Good and really, really cheap good. Frozen pizza, and it's
Aldi?
Huge. Aldi.
Aldi?
It's like $5 for this huge pizza, like square pizza.
I thought maybe... no, go ahead, Griff. I thought somebody might. I was hoping that somebody would come through with some snobby opinion on frozen pizza. We seem to be in agreement.
Yeah.
All in the high 80s.
No. Although there does come a line when if the cost is so low, you think, okay, this is almost like.
Jack's.
I still like Jack's.
Jack's is, I know, it's good. I don't even know why I said that. It's
food,
good.
But food costs money. And if at some point it's not costing enough, you say, wait a minute.
I just thought you'd come through with another take like you had on popsicles.
Yeah, if anybody would be snobby about it, John, I would peg you. But I'm surprised.
No. Thank you for keeping score on me like that, guys. I don't even remember what I said about popsicles.
You didn't like them.
It didn't play. All right, what's next?
In TV, This Is Us, a new NBC drama about families, love, and four characters that all share the same birthday. That's sort of the conceit, I guess.
Oh, I noticed they all had the same age. They all have the same birthday. Okay. Yeah, 36 is the operative year here.
Okay. And it premiered last week. The New York Times called it skillful, shameless tear-jerking.
Totally correct. That is brilliant.
So you watched the first episode. What did you think? What's your score?
I was prepared not to like it because I don't want to sound like Nick DiGilio, but when they have music soaring at the end of these scenes, you know. You could just see Nick losing his mind. And I'm like, oh, give it a break. It's a good show. It actually is pretty good. They're good stories. And it's well-crafted. But, yeah, it's pretty heavy-handed. But I think it's good. I gave it a 92, Griff. No, I didn't give it a 92. What did I give it? Probably in the 80s on that. It surprised me how much I liked it. I'll say that.
I can't vibe it because I didn't watch it, but considering that it's getting an 83 total, I have to check it out. And I heard it's a tearjerker. Did somebody we know cry a couple times?
I heard that. There was one scene.
Read that.
Where I was surprised with the emotion that I was getting from it. Final answer.
I love that euphemism. The emotion I felt was considerable. Won't say if I cried or not.
There's a euphemism for you.
I thought also that it looked totally shameless. So I was turned off and I didn't watch it, but now I'm hearing good things, so I'll go in. It reminds me, it looks like Parenthood.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That was also
Parenthood
on NBC.
Meets 30-something is what it looks like to me, too.
And I loved Parenthood. It was also shameless tear-jerking, but I did love that show. So maybe this one will be good. I'll have to check it out. Let's see. You know, in movies, I know we didn't see it. Antoine Fuqua's remake of The Magnificent Seven hits theaters this weekend.
I hate this movie.
Why?
This movie is ridiculous because that these guys survive those scenes is absurd. It's a terrible movie. Do not go see it.
Okay. I know you have not seen it.
No, I haven't seen it yet. But I saw the trailers
for it. Yeah. It does look like that kind of extreme violence, action, fun kind of thing. Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt.
It's a great cast.
I love those stars, so I'm thinking I actually will go see it. But
all right, we'll await your vibe next time. But if you do see it, if you're following the movie group and Vibe Score, there's your chance to give us your vibe on that. By the way, Griff, we didn't play the audio for this, but Deck, did you see the Between Two Ferns, Hillary Clinton, Zach Galifianakis thing?
Oh, yes.
And what did you think of that?
I vibed it a 92 because
I loved
it.
Oh, my God, was that good. I gave it. It's exactly the score I gave it, too. And I thought it was politically risky. The Mincing Rascals talk about it in our podcast, the Mincing Rascals podcast. Everybody loved it and shared it. They all thought it was brilliant on her part. But I thought that, like I said, I wasn't sure that the payoff was going to be there for her. But it's, boy, is that a funny skit. It's so deadpan. And that is getting it was getting like in the 90s. Now it's down to 65. Some haters walked into the room on that one.
And every week we check in with the Bears and the Cubs pretty much these days. So
yeah.
One's getting an 18, one's getting an 86.
Can you
guess?
That's our Vibe Score segment. You can subscribe to Vibe Score wherever you subscribe to your finer apps. It's a free download for you. All right, thank you, Griffin. Decker, good to hear your voice. Thanks for playing along.
Love Vibe Score.
The boys from The Beat preview their show. That's around the corner here on WGN. Hey, Sharon, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, there you are. Have you been to one of our Thomas Jefferson shows before, Sharon?
No, I have not.
Oh, my goodness. You got to go see this thing. Bring a friend. Drag a friend. Here's what's going to happen, Sharon, I promise. You're going to say, hey, Lois, assuming your friend's name is Lois. You'll say, Lois, I won tickets to see Thomas Jefferson. And then she's going to say, what? I don't want to go to that. And then when that show is over, the two of you will be the biggest fans of this because he'll absolutely captivate you, I promise.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah, you're going to have a great time. Wave to me when we're up on stage, okay, Sharon?
I certainly will.
Okay, thanks for listening. Talk to Griff off the air. We'll make sure we get you those seats, okay? Okay, let's talk a little sports now. The boys from The Beat are getting ready. Kevin and Mark, are you ready to roll?
We most definitely are, John. Kevin's got something with you. I don't know if it's beef or just love.
No, it's love, of course, as always with John. The frozen pizza discussion, I could do an hour on frozen pizza. Jack's phenomenal. Jewel Osco brand frozen pizza, underrated.
Seriously?
Yeah, I haven't had it in a while, but I remember grew up on that stuff.
I don't want to be a pizza snob, I mean, because I've expressed my love for frozen pizza, but usually the store brand is the most suspect one, don't you think?
I guess so, but I guess that's...
It's good, though, huh?
It's really good. I like the frozen pizzas because you can doctor them up a bit, you know?
Yep.
I always put a little hot sauce, maybe get some dipping ranch on the side. It's fun. I enjoy frozen pizza.
If memory serves, John, Jewel does a very nice ice cream sandwich. Haven't had it in a while, but I believe they do a solid, solid performance on the ice cream sandwich. Not familiar with the pizza, but willing to learn.
What's your go-to frozen pizza?
I don't go frozen pizza. I think that's a terrible idea. There's 8,000 pizza places in this city. I'm going to find one of them if I want pizza. I'm not going frozen.
Well, you can get 5 frozen pizzas for $10 from Jewel. It's hard to pass that up. Tombstone, high-quality frozen pizza.
Tombstone, when I was a kid, John, that was a big, big deal. Loved a good Tombstone after a seventh grade of not paying attention to class. I was.
But now that you mention, if ever there were a city where we shouldn't be eating frozen pizza, it is Chicago.
That's underperforming to the highest level. We can't have
that.
It's
like going to a Long John Silver's in Boston.
Yep.
You know, you're like, dude, the fish is right there. What are you doing?
Subway in New York.
It's the convenience of not leaving home, I guess.
So what's a big topic today, fellas?
So anybody who disrespects this country and the flag, if they don't like our flag, then get the hell out. You know who said that? I think you do, John.
Yeah, it's the hipster Captain Mike Ditka.
Coach. Where
have you guys talked about that? Where are you on the Kaepernick thing?
I am pro Colin Kaepernick all day myself. I think Kevin is not completely with me on this, although I'm working hard to bring him along.
You're not going to win me over, trust me, Carm.
Yeah.
Did you see that his jersey sold more in the week after he took a knee than it did in the 8 months previous?
Yep. He's also the most hated player in the NFL right now, and there's 44% of NFL fans, John, that say they're not going to watch the NFL if the...
Which is crazy. You know people saying that are still going to turn their TVs on.
You're absolutely right.
They're just saying that a quick glance at whatever the poll they were taking, and they were like, nope, don't like them, I wouldn't watch. But of course, if it was on, they would watch.
On the Monday night game, the Bears were playing, and they were showing the players during the national anthem, and they showed very briefly the three players who took the fist, and then they cut away. And I thought, I wonder what the network thinks about that. Is the NFL saying keep away from that, or that's not part of the game, but it's part of the story. Should they show the protesters as the national anthem is being played?
I think they should, because it's whether you agree with it or not, as you just said, John, it's part of the story. I think they have the duty to do that, to bring that to everybody's home and attention that that's happening.
Also, what's interesting to me, I'm actually segueing off that for a second here, John, but where there aren't TV cameras at high school games, I mean, it's happening all over the place.
It's amazing.
Volleyball, football, the whole deal.
But here's the thing I have with it is that, and Carm and I are going to get into this a little bit later, I'm assuming, Mark, but it's what is the message that everyone is trying to send? I think when this all started, it was a misguided attempt by Colin Kaepernick. He sort of scrambled to change the message, and clearly he had his PR team around him telling him, well, we got to be careful here. Let's make sure we have a direct message. What are we saying to people by doing this? I think initially it was a very one-sided move by Colin Kaepernick and a direct finger-pointing, whatever you want to call it, at police officers. And I think it was misguided to start. I think it's changed and it's evolved, but just initially was not a huge fan of him doing that.
John, where are you at? Please, I'm curious.
I've been talking about this a lot, and here's the only advice I have for you. I can promise both of you that whatever position you take, you're going to piss a lot of people off. That's what I've got in store for you. That's your future, my friends.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's fine.
Let's have a discussion. I think it's good for all of us.
We'll be awaiting that. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, John.
We'll get you into the newsroom. That's next on WGN.